text or WhatsApp your view to Greg on 086 60 25,000.
Very welcome back to Wednesday's 9 till noon show, the 17th of September. I hope you're all very well indeed. If anyone can safely get a picture of the Stranola Maclay Corner's crater, as we're calling it now, it's the Maclay's Corner crater. I'm not calling it, that's what listeners are calling it. Do get it into us if you can, because it is, you know, when you've got Ben, a truck driver, saying, look, it's destroying the vehicle, and others having to swerve to avoid it on potentially one of the busiest junctions in the county. I would love to get a look at it because of passing it at night time. So let me know what the, if you can say, and it has to be safely, of course, get a picture of Stranola Crater. Sticking with that, I'm waiting for the Stranola Crater to take the wheel off my car. Best sporting facilities in Ireland per capita with the worst moon crater like Main Street. Maybe it's going to be used for the next Irish obstacle course race. Better get fixed before the mythological bypass lands. Yeah, well, you'd probably be dangling out of Australia by the time the bypass happens. The courthouse in Letterkenny. In my opinion, 7 million on the old courthouse is wasting money. Put it into our health service, housing, the bridge over the Swilly. We have the theatre and a cultural centre down the street, tourism building at a Polestar or at the Polestar. Why not put offices in it or something that generates income instead of wasting 7 million? Now, you know, that 7 million could be going to another part of the world. I think there's different tranches of funding in different areas of spending. I don't know the ins and outs of that, but, you know, they're off budgets in each area and they're not necessarily transferable. Is that 7 million, it'll never end up on the bridge. It'll never end up in the health service. Is that 7 million not better, you know, which is a very important part of Letterkenny, the old courthouse? Is it not better there developing something there? I'm just throwing it out there because, as I say, the truth is if it's not spent there, it doesn't magically appear in the hospital or on a road or elsewhere. You know, the likes of the 10T, for an example, you know, it's going to be funded out of roads money, and we're being assured that it is going to be funded. So that 7 million would just be lost in that project. I'm just trying to play devil's advocate here. If you think it's an absolute waste of money, that's a very valid point of view, and share it with us as well. I'm on the dual carriageway into Letterkenny just now on the way back to work, and because of the roadworks, there's a large tailback. Three cars have just passed me on the inside lane on the hard shoulder. Why don't these drivers leave a bit earlier? Why are the Gardaí not monitoring this behaviour and finding them hard? To the other drivers up front who let them in, try teaching them some basic driving manners by making them sit there. Is it possible they're taking a left turn? Maybe they're heading towards... Maybe they're heading towards Ballybuffet and they're going to turn left and sort of go up the back road that runs alongside Lurgybrack Road. I'm not saying that's justification. I'm just throwing it out there. Is that a possibility? I'm actually sometimes I really annoy people when people are frustrated by bad behaviour and I try and forgive it. I'm not trying to do that. I'm sorry. I know it's very frustrating. I've been that soldier and it annoys the hell out of me. You used to see it there before they changed the road at the T-junction there, what's it called, heading into Ballybuffet from Letterkenny. You know, cars would scoot up the left, do a U-ey and then cut across. It used to be very annoying because it's dangerous. You could do, but you didn't, and others were doing it. What that man is saying is 100% true. Life's basic things in life cannot be troublesome, and some of the roads are awful. Another, I couldn't agree more. Parts of the moon smoother than Stranola. I don't understand why they are doing Drumkeen and not Stranola. Hi, Greg. I'm in Tenerife at the minute and travelling from north to south of the island. I keep saying to myself that we have third world roads compared to the quality of highways and byways here. It's no joke. The standard of our roads and the amount of motor tax and petrol and diesel that we pay. Indeed. Listen, enjoy Tenerife. What's it like? What's the weather like? And listen, thanks so much for staying tuned to us, even though you may well be on your holidays. Read the Catherine Connolly Owen Hayes headline. Glad someone is seeing sense. Like Catherine Connolly, a student dressed up at Halloween, for goodness sake. We all have some mistakes we make in our student lives. It looks like Owen Hayes has someone maybe in Social Democrats who've been digging for any misinformation or misdemeanour and trying to cancel him. Yeah, indeed, and I said this in the show yesterday, very few of us couldn't have something dug up or reminded of something that we're not proud of. So, yeah. Drinking less or drinking zero and taking on vaping, that's the new now. And what the heck's in vapes? Be careful. Yeah, I get where you're coming from. And there is, you know, there are vapes and it's being outlawed now that do have some sort of mind-altering elements to it. Vaping is whatever's in the liquid plus nicotine. Obviously, drinking, we know what drink is. Listen, but thank you for that. The new shopping area in Letterkenny is a disgrace, believes a listener. Promise of toilets have yet to happen. Well, almost at the point where I'm not doing interviews on those toilets any longer because I feel like I've been misleading the public, not intentionally, but in other words, there's a plan. This is what we're going to do. It's going to happen. They'll be open now. You know, and I'm hearing this over and over and over again, yet I'm also being contacted by people who don't go to that area of Letterkenny because they can't do so because they need a toilet when they need a toilet. So it's kind of frustrating, you know, that we just put a blooming toilet in there. Hi, Greg. Having used most of the public toilets around the county, I must say Dunlow is one of the best kept toilets in the county and is usually always open. It must have been a once-off. Listen, thank you for that. Any public toilets or are public toilets for tourists only, asks the listener. I don't know. I'm supposing as to why they might be closed. Is it because the tourism season's officially over? Sorry, I wasn't stating that as a fact. But, you know, why would there be padlocks on the toilets in Dunlow otherwise? I'm waiting for an answer. And when I say I mean we. Another caller says most towns nowadays have lovely cafes and nice hotels to have a bite to eat in, but all our towns in Donegal let us down badly where public toilets are concerned. Why, oh why, they ask. Had a great reaction to Daniel O'Donnell on the show yesterday. Obviously, he was on just to clarify that he's taken a step back from touring for a period of time just to build himself up, having battled some allergies. And as it so happens, just with a change in how people consume information, and I suppose less information from Daniel, the fanzine, the official fanzine's been wound down. But most of the people that access him directly on socials anyway. But some of you, and we also asked him about, would he take a run at the presidency as well? Daniel, says this listener, has already, without the realisation of it, been an ambassador for Ireland around the world, always talking about Ireland and growing up in Ireland and Donegal. That comes in from Gary. And Gary, you're so right. I think we've lost great people to politics, elected politics, people that were actually making a difference. And you get into politics and you become, I don't know how you would describe it, you just become part of a clique, you know. And I've seen really good people with really good, you know, what you would say is, you know, what, and this can be people of all different political backgrounds, and you go into elected politics and you just become part of that system. And then I think you lose that important platform that you had almost. So I think you make a really good point about Daniel O'Donnell. He's achieving probably much more in terms of our reputation and promoting our beautiful country and county than he might even be able to do so as president. Another caller says, Greg, what makes Daniel right for the job is the fact he thinks he isn't right for the job. He's already proving himself to be a stalwart of an ambassador for Donegal. What would he not be able to do for the country? That's just a follow-on from that first text. Another, Daniel's such an absolute amazing human being who should have been selected unanimously as President of Ireland. He's everything in Donegal, or to Donegal, Ireland in fact, the whole Irish diaspora worldwide, a Gael Gore, a fantastic entertainer, but most importantly, a wonderful human being with understanding, empathy, joy, happiness and everything. Enjoy your wee break. We all love you. That comes in from Helen and Mary. And loads more messages, and we will get to them. Actually, someone pointed out that, and I don't want to, you know, I mean, someone might be in a very desperate situation, but there seems to be a tent on the Joe Bonner Link Road, and it's been there for a couple of weeks now. I mean, it's not very pleasant to be outside, but some people are saying that they've seen this tent on the Joe Bonner Link Road in Letterkenny for over 2 weeks now, and they claim that their family is scared to visit the park. Is this going to be the new norm? Now, I don't know who's in the tent, how many people are in the tent, where they're from, what they're doing. There's no suggestion that, you know, they're involved in anything nefarious. It's just that this family is scared to go down there, and they're wondering, is this the new norm where in public spaces you're going to see tents here, there and everywhere? It's a terrible indictment, really, of how we're doing things. I'm sure no one would be You'd hope no one would be living in a tent, lying on concrete by choice. But anyway, that family feels intimidated to go near that area and are wondering, can the guards not move that persons on? We're very excited, actually, by the way. We mentioned this at the time, but the IMRO Awards are coming up at the start of October. And these are the awards that... they're like the Oscars for Irish radio. So it's, you know, your local stations like us, your regional stations like iRadio, your national stations like, controversially enough, the BBC and RTE are in there as well. And you get nominated, and if you're lucky enough, you get shortlisted, and potentially you could go on to win an award. Now, little old Highland Radio is doing really quite well for itself, not least this show, because we are shortlisted in the interactive speech programme section. Now, it's going to be a tough category for us, the 9 till noon show, because we're up against Liveline from RTE and the Nolan Show from BBC Radio Ulster, which is actually kind of hard to listen to since... BBC Sounds stopped broadcasting into the Republic, and Red FM and Radio Carrier in there as well. So listen, we're one of five. Being shortlisted is fantastic. We'll keep you up to date at that time. It's in the first Friday of October, I think, that we're heading down to Kilkenny. But also to been nice to get recognition for our local election coverage as well. We had a great reaction to that, and... that's in the news programme, Local Regional. We put a lot of effort into that for, I think, for all the right reasons as well. We just wanted people to be able to be really part of that process and to enjoy it wherever they are. So we're shortlisted there alongside Ocean FM, Q102 and WLR. And our own Oisín Kelly is in the running for the Sports Broadcaster of the Year, which would be a lovely thing for him, and a great recognition of all he's achieving and what have you. And he's shortlisted in that as well. So to be shortlisted in and of itself, given the amount of radio stations, is really a great achievement. So we will keep you updated on that ceremony, and we'll certainly blow our own trumpet if we win and say very little about it if we don't. Isn't that how it normally works, especially with the listenership figures and all that? You do see quite a bit of that. No, Caroline, that person's just not in there yet. So McClay's Crater, I've got some images of it here, and it is a big one, and it's almost as if it's been stripped back. That road is just absolutely brutal. Have a look at that, folks. If you're watching the show, have a look at that. It is a crater. I see why people are calling it a crater there. It's almost down. You'd swear to God the road was built on Roman blocks, and they've been exposed. That's how bad it is. And it's just right there where you might be turning. Let's see if we can get another angle. Yeah, you can see why they're calling it a crater. Lads and lassies, let's get a wheelbarrow of tar and chuck it in there. You can see where the other holes have been replaced, but that's absolutely brutal, especially for big vehicles that can't avoid it. So it is there, McClay's Crater, and the sooner that is fixed, the better. You know, you're going through there in an Arctic. How many wheels are going to be hitting, banging out of that? It's bad enough as it is. Listen, if the road can't be resurfaced for a time, at least get the McClay's Crater sorted, the McClay's Corner Crater. All right, some of your comments here. It's a disgrace. Letterkenny has no public toilet, while most other towns in Donegal have one. Shame on our councillors. Good morning, Greg. I just heard you mention traffic on the dual carriageway there, and wondering, can you clarify something for me? My daughter was coming from the Manor direction this morning and going on to the dual carriageway heading for Letterkenny. Obviously, the rule is if you're going to Letterkenny, you take the right-hand lane, and if you're going towards Lifford, you should be in the left lane. This morning, she was in the right lane, but a van and trailer came around on the left lane beside her going to Letterkenny as well. I'm just wondering if the rules have changed in some way, but this isn't... but isn't this wrong? She got an awful shock because as you go around the roundabout, you usually veer towards the left lane again. So are you in the left lane on the carriageway? Right. So someone's going to give me better advice on this than I can. But my understanding is both of those lanes go into Letterkenny. The left lane is straight on and onto the left lane of the four lane, so to speak. But the left lane can also... take you up towards Ballybuffet, and the right lane, generally speaking, you can use that lane and go into the right lane of the two lanes of the four lanes. So I hope that's perfectly clear for you now, but I believe you can use both lanes there, but you wouldn't cut across exiting those lanes between the two lanes, right? Did I say lanes? Patricia Devlin is from The Journal Investigates and joined me just at the really wrong time as I tried to explain a complex road junction. Patricia, good morning to you. Thank you so much for your time. I do appreciate it.
Thanks for having me on, Greg.
Right, now, you have been part of the Journal Investigates team looking at hate crime figures. And what have been your findings, the most notable?
Yes. So I think everyone knows over the last few months we've seen a number of high profile alleged racist attacks taking place in Ireland. And so we wanted to analyse data. And the only data available to us was from 2021 to 2024. And we found that the number of anti-race crimes and related incidents has risen by 24% since 2021. So last year, of the 676 hate crimes and reports made to Gardaí, around 264 were connected to race, and that's an increase from 213 recorded in 2021, when a total of 483 hate crimes and incidents were logged. So it's quite a rise. We're seeing more so-called hate crimes. Those are recorded by Gardaí on the Pulse system, and it is done so based on the victims or reporting party's perception. So unfortunately, that makes race the single most common motive for hate crime in Ireland.
And it is increasing. Is there a sense that the reports and the collation of those figures tell the full story?
Well, I spoke to experts, including Dr. James Carr, who is an associate professor of sociology at the University of Limerick. He studied racism here for over a decade. He says that while those reports are up, which is a good thing, it actually tells us that the number of underreported incidents is also up. So there will be many people who have suffered a hate crime, been racially abused, that won't report it to Gardaí. So while those figures are up, so is the incidents that aren't reported.
Do I get a sense, and I wonder, has anyone you've spoken to got a sense that people feel more empowered to maybe express sentiments or views publicly or to someone's face that they may have harboured privately in the past?
Well, as I mentioned, Dr. Carr, he believes that racism today, and in particular in Ireland, has got more aggressive, it's got more obvious and more brazen, that people are more emboldened today to take racist positions and ask questions that are, you know, appear to be dog whistles for racism. I did ask him about, you know, the online world, where comments, it's like the Wild West. You know, is that linked to offline violence? And Dr. Carr said, absolutely, it is. So, you know, that is playing a huge part in what we're seeing today. And, you know, Dr. Carr said that he felt that the failure to include hate speech legislation in our new hate crime laws was a missed opportunity to deal with that.
Also of the view then that the current hate crime legislation does not go far enough. Did he indicate what else the government needs to do? Is it to expand that legislation, other actions that he believes should be taken?
His view and the view of other experts that I spoke to is that hate crime laws can't tackle this alone. There needs to be a whole society approach. There needs to be education. You know, well, two of the alleged attacks that I've referenced, including an attack on a six-year-old Indian girl outside our County Waterford home, and the attack on the man in Talla who was stripped of his clothing and assaulted after being falsely accused of inappropriate behaviour. I've just completely lost my
You're perfectly fine. You did actually make the point that you were seeking to make. Thank you for that. One in two of the healthcare staff in Letterkenny University Hospital are close to it, and I think this is sort of replicated not just in the acute services but in the home care sector and what have you, not necessarily from Ireland. Some of them are actually second generation Irish, right? But you would have thought that maybe given the fact that they're contributing so much to the community, that even those that harbour these views might hold them back. But unfortunately, the frontline health service staff are often at the brunt of this type of abuse.
Yeah, I spoke to Phil Nashar, who, as we know, is the president of the main trade union here in Ireland. Excuse me. And she says that our healthcare staff are actually, you know, at the forefront at experiencing racism. She has actually called in the Department of Justice to bring in protection for workers travelling to and from work, which I think is just appalling that that even has to be considered. The Indian Embassy has also advised its citizens here to not travel through deserted areas and to be very safety conscious after the recent spate of attacks. So it's really sad that, you know, without migrant healthcare workers, our health system would collapse, basically. I mean, that's a fact.
Yeah. You also quote CSO statistics, which, you know, came out at the time and maybe didn't get the focus that they deserved. But it shows the extent of, you know, discrimination being felt by, I'll call it the non-white community. I don't know how you catch all, really, because there are people who are from different countries that have just arrived. You have people who are, you know, second and third generation that have dark skin. So it's very hard to sort of catch all. But anyway, the CSO figures did, in terms of terminology, sorry. And they found that quite a startling amount of Black Irish, Black African and people with other Black backgrounds had experienced discrimination.
Yeah, they found their research was, which is always brilliant. The CSO do a really brilliant job. They not only, you know, gather statistics, but they do research reports. And they found that half of those from a Black Irish, Black African or other Black background had experienced discrimination of some form in the previous 2 years. And that's compared to just one in five respondents who identified as White Irish. So, I mean, that's a huge indicator of what many people are experiencing here.
As we start talking about, you know, maybe increasing laws, increasing penalties on the world we live in now, that actually really, I think, can exacerbate problems and widen divisions. People might text in and say, yeah, but what about what's going on in my community? Where are the statistics about what's happening in certain parts of Letterkenny or whatever it might be? So, like, I mean, we can see in other countries what happens when we go down the route of trying to, you know, use the law to try. That's not what this is about, I don't think. This is about us coexisting in this space. And I think some of the people you spoke to recognise that too, don't they? That this is not just because if you introduce really stringent laws, next thing you know, you've just got, you know, thousands of people on the street saying, you know, this, that, and then. So we need alternative approaches as well. Is that what some people were saying to you?
Yes, absolutely. It's not one expert that I spoke to said we need to bring in laws, we need to jail people, we need to do that. It's about the whole societal change for the benefit of everybody, you know, because, you know, there has been racism in Ireland going back generations. It's been everywhere. You know, it's not an Ireland-only issue, but what we're seeing recently is, you know, the attacks I mentioned, and that is really worrying. And of course, these statistics are worrying. So it's about making that change. And I, you know, like Dr. James Carr said, a deeper change is what really needed. Not, you know, think about it beyond the incident, whether it's a hate crime or an experience of discrimination. We need to support the people who are targeted, but we also need to take that broader society approach to deal with racism as a whole.
Mm-hmm. Okay, listen, Patricia, thank you for your time. The full investigation is available on thejournal.ie. It's part of the Journal Investigates programme. Thank you for your time, Patricia. Look
thank
after
you.
Yourself. Bye-bye, take care. Patricia Devlin there. Did I say Divine? Sorry, Devlin, my apologies. But yeah, like, it's a far more complex situation and, you know, I think it's rooted in immigration policy. And this is not just here, this is everywhere. You know, people think this is an Irish conversation. It's not, it's happening everywhere. People have concerns about too many people coming into the country. And then you know, instead of sort of maybe having a go at the government, they have a go at the people. But then they don't just have a go at the people that are coming in that maybe are coming in for the wrong reasons. They have a go at everyone that looks like that person that's coming in for the wrong reasons. And I don't know how you undo that. I don't know how you unpack it, really, to be honest with you. I haven't a clue. I watch on and see what's happening around the world, and it's kind of depressing, and you can see it happening here as well. But we'll see. I don't know. I can see all sides. I can't see any side to being abusive to people or being racist or what have you. But I mean, I can see what's driving this. What's driving this is genuine concern. And then you have a cohort of people that are, you know, applying their own agendas or using that for their own reasons as well. You know, and as I say, you can see that in Britain. You can see it in Ireland now. You know, you can say anything now at all, anything about anyone. There's no rules, regs in terms of, you know, what can and can't be said online anymore. Simply not. You can say anything. And then it's kind of interesting in that, you know, people talk about left or right, what's happening in America at the moment. The greatest advocates of free speech, you know, the more the more conservative are like, yeah, we're all for free speech, but you can't say this about Charlie Kirk. You can't say that about Donald Trump. You can't say you have to be cancelled. You have to lose your job. You need to be taken off social media. And what we're seeing in America now is the biggest proponents of anti-free speech are the more conservative, who are the biggest defenders of free speech and carrying arms, etc. It's a crazy old world. And then there's no irony in it at all. So you've got whole swathes of sort of very conservative ex-accounts now trying to get other people banned for saying words that they didn't like. But they're not saying it's words that we didn't like. That's hate speech. But what we say is not hate speech. And as I say, the left's as bad as the right at times, the extremes of both, by the way, I mean. And I just can't get my head around it all, nor do I want to, although given that I'm sitting in this seat, we do tease it out and have a chat. But do you get where I'm coming from? I'm waffling. 086 60 25,000. Okay, there's lots of people that are struggling financially. We reference that an awful lot on this programme. But we also are coming, and there have been some measures to assist with the back to school, but for some still, it is a time whereby there's extra expense. We're also coming to that period where you might be looking at your oil tank and, you know, it's just above the tap and, you know, you're probably going to have to spend, you know, 480 quid on 500 litres or whatever it might be. And then we're heading towards Christmas, and Christmas can be quite expensive as we try and meet all of the family's expectations. So, as I say, you know, there's a lot coming down the line on top of, and also too, there's some uncertainty about what supports, if any, will be available from the government as we start using more electricity whilst we still pay some of the highest electricity rates in Europe. So there's a lot going on there, right? And it can become overwhelming, but, you know, we can try and plan. We have to talk about it, take our heads out of the sand if they're in there, and see what we can do to try and deal with these unavoidable costs. Carl Cronin is MABS regional manager and national spokesperson. He's with us now. Carl, good morning to you.
Good morning, Greg.
I'm trying to frame the reality of many people out there, and I have in the back of my head, of course, this fact that 220,000 children are living in poverty in this country, in this wealthy country, as I'm continuously being told. Money worries, you know, they put such a strain on us as individuals, on relationships. You know, when you're struggling financially, you almost can't take solace in your health or your relationship or your family because it can be so blooming overwhelming.
You're absolutely right. And financial stress and financial anxiety affects pretty much every one of us at some stage of our lives. And being in debt and being in that position is a very lonely place to be. And it does have a huge impact on relationships, your physical health, your mental health. And that's why it's important that we talk about financial woes and worries and concerns. And there shouldn't be a stigma around financial issues because we all go through them. No matter how much money is coming in or how little money is coming into a house, we all have lifestyles that are tailored accordingly, and we need to plan and organise and budget our household expenses and make sure we're getting the most of our income coming in as well to meet all those expenses.
There was a period of time, and it's not too long ago, where I had two credit cards, and I think they were at 3,000 and 7,000 or something like that there. And the mortgage was there as well, and I overborrowed on the mortgage, if the truth be told. And, you know, I couldn't meet the minimum payments. My wage is my income. I couldn't meet the minimum payments on the credit cards and the mortgage and actually just eat and heat the house. That was just the reality. But the phone calls, the constant phone calls, the letters that used to come through, you know, I would get no post before, but then I was getting five or six letters. And as I say, and I was just ignoring it. I couldn't see the woods for the trees. There was no way out of it. It was an absolutely impossible situation. And I felt the world was closing in on top of me because there just seemed to be no hope whatsoever in terms of meeting these financial responsibilities. I think things have improved somewhat now with the likes of MABS and getting the information out there. But my point is that there are people listening who are probably going to find themselves in the same position as I was not too long ago, right? But there is help. You can't do what I did, ignore it and think it will go away and end up not eating and having indigestion and anxiety and every other blooming thing. You have to do something about it.
It can be very overwhelming. And as you say, as the letters keep coming in, what our experience is many people stop opening the letters because they know what it's going to say and they know what the contents are. But you're absolutely right in that there is help available here in MABS. And many times when we meet clients for the first time, they bring in a bundle of posts to us and say, I just wasn't able to start going through this. I know I owe money, but I can't cope with the calls anymore. I can't cope with the post anymore. And we sit down and we work out a realistic plan and prioritise who needs to be paid. So credit cards, they're what we call secondary debts. Your priority is food, light, heat, the roof over your head. And we work out a plan based on every household and every individual circumstances based on that. And it's very important as well that we look at the income side coming into every house, Greg.
But you say there, Carl, and I just want to sort of make sure I know what MABS offers to support. So you say, right, the credit cards are secondary. But yeah. I'm not engaging with the credit card companies anyway. So can MABS help in that regard to sort of try and assist me to get the ducks in the row, but also engage with some of the lending institutions, for an example?
Absolutely. And that's probably one of the primary roles we do, Greg, is intervene, and we act as the honest broker between the borrower and the lender and the institute that did give you the credit card or the bank loan or whatever the case may be. And we do have quite good protocols in place with those lenders. So when they get a financial statement from us that shows the individual's income, their expenses and how they're trying to address their debt scenarios, the creditors will very much work with us and work with the borrowers as well. And it may be something like a token payment of €5 per month just to not go legal on a debt. Because if you ignore it and if you keep your head in the sand, you're leaving them with no option but to go down a legal avenue to try and recover the debt, which only serves to add more costs to a debt that's already unmanageable. So the reality is getting the help and getting the advice and getting the support through us to come up with a realistic, sustainable plan. And what we find is if a creditor rings today and you just want to get them off the phone and you promise them, I'll pay you €50 on Friday when I get paid, they are going to expect that every Friday and you can't maintain that. Mm-hmm. So you're making promises that you know you can't keep, but you're backed into a corner and you feel like you've no other choice. And that's just going to come catch up with you very quickly. Whereas our plans work on a sustainable budget, a very small, regular amount that everybody is happy, that stops the phone calls, that stops the letters, and ultimately leads to financial independence in the long run. And it may take 1 year or 2 years or 3 years to get there, but it is the peace of mind and it's the weight lifted off
the shoulders. I can't imagine what it must have felt like, you know, when I was in the depths of it, to go in and sit in front of one of your colleagues and walk out knowing, right, I'm not turning my back on my responsibilities, but I can actually maybe manage now, or there's a plan, or I can sleep tonight without wondering what's going to come through the door in the morning. You know, people really, really need to engage with MABS in this matter if they're in that space, I think.
100%. There has to be a plan and there has to be communication. Because if there's no communication with the bank or with the credit card company, whatever, the calls are going to keep coming, the letters are going to keep coming. But if we open a channel through of communication, and many people who come to us are very capable and able to do this themselves with our support, and we just prompt them with the letters and prompt them with the language they need to use and prompt them with, this is a realistic offer you can make. You can afford this, but you can't afford that. Mm-hmm. Don't overcommit in terms of a repayment plan. And that's what it's all about. And we'll revisit the plan. If someone's circumstances change overnight, maybe somebody gets sick in the household or there's a redundancy or a separation or some description of an income shock, We can revisit the plan any amount of times that needs be, but it's all about a realistic, sustainable plan that is affordable and that can keep the weight off your shoulders.
And there's also information there too about if you fall behind in your electricity, there are schemes still in place there. That means you won't be disconnected if you enter into an agreement. There are other assistance from the state through the Department of Social Welfare and what have you that are there available to help with things like fuel as well. So there is supports there. But, you know, there's this presumption too, Carl, that we all know how to deal with money. Like, I know people really that can't really, in a way, differentiate between a 20-euro and a 50-euro note. It's just, you know, the way their mind works. And even if that's not the issue, sometimes making this amount of money cover that amount of debt or living over this period of time, it can be beyond people. So can MABS help in terms of looking at someone's finances and breaking it down in a more manageable, understandable way?
Yeah, one of the first things we do, Greg, is look at maximising the income coming into the house, because as you say yourself, sometimes you're trying to fit a square peg into a round hole and it's just not going to work. But there are lots of supports out there available, and we know where to signpost. We know where to access those supports. If it's a utility arrears issue, we know there's an energy engage code. Get them engaged in that code to avoid disconnection. If it's a non-secure debt, get them into a very small repayment plan, or look at a protocol that we have in place with the Bank and Payments and Federation of Ireland, for example, with all the members there. So it's very much about breaking it down piece by piece, prioritising where the money has to go every week or every month. And that's non-negotiable. Mm-hmm. And then see where the discretionary money has to go. And is there any left over for the credit cards, for the personal loan? Mm-hmm. The mortgage or the rent is a priority, and we strive to make sure that that's affordable. But it's all about looking at the plan. We'll move it around three or four times before we get it right. And then we may have to review it three or four times over the course of a year or 2 years. But it's all about having that plan in place and breaking it down so that our clients understand how to manage their finances better going forward. We do a lot of work in the schools as well, Greg. Yeah. And we're surprised at the amount of young people now who just don't deal in cash whatsoever, and everything is tapping, and everything is they don't really see the value of money because it's just on a screen or on a phone, and it's money in and money out. So we work with educating them as well in terms of budgeting and being conscious about where your money goes, because it if you don't have that understanding and that grasp of money, it's very hard to let it spiral out of control very quickly.
And just finally, we're not that far away from Christmas. Christmas, depending on family circumstances and the makeup of the family, can be incredibly expensive. And we don't want a situation where people are getting short-term loans, high-interest loans, at the start of December. So can we contact MABS to sort of say, right, this is where I'm at, and can you help me plan for Christmas and meeting whatever needs or expectations might be there in the house? And I suppose maybe sometimes a reality check in there as well.
Yeah, so this is the 3 month alarm bell for Christmas, and people will think we're mad talking about Christmas when they've just got the children back to school. But very often we get asked about Christmas and budgeting for Christmas in December when it's like 1, 2 or 3 weeks away, and your options are very limited at that stage. And that's why we're asking people this week to sit down and think about Christmas. And if you want to talk to an advisor on our helpline or one of our advisors in one of our office, we'll help you look at what can you realistically afford to put aside every week or every month over the next 3 months to make Christmas affordable, to avoid getting into debt for one day, because that's just not going to be that you'll end up in a cycle of debt if you end up getting into debt for Christmas. To avoid that scenario, let's see what's realistically affordable to spend on Christmas and how you can start putting that aside between now and then.
All right. Yeah, exactly. And, you know, that people might think, well, I can't afford to put anything to one side. Well, let's have a look at your finances, because you might be able to. You know, you could be, you know, there's people with 50, 60 a month phone bills. There's no need for that in this day and age in the SIM-only era. You can get everything that you need for $12.99. You know, there's 40 quid a month in straight up. That's just one example. Carl, thank you so much for your time. Keep doing what you're doing there at MABS, M-A-B-S. They are free, they're independent, and they're controversial, confidential. Thanks so much, Carl. Take care of yourself. Bye-bye. Right, thanks, by the way. Carlos says, fair play for sharing your story, Greg. I don't really see it like that. I mean, I'm just a... I think I'm just a normal person. That was just my experience. I don't feel any shame in it. I made some bad decisions and I buried my head and all that kind of stuff. But I've been through much worse. It was a difficult old spell between the jigs and the reels. But there's also a lot of borrowing that went on during the Celtic Tiger as well. I mean, I would say there's like lawnmowers on my mortgage. Do you know what I mean? Do you know stupid short-term purchases that ended up when you were panicking and remortgaged and managed to find a company that might do that, even though you couldn't afford it? So, like, my mortgage is probably quite a lot of short-term borrowing, what should have been short-term borrowing on that cars that have been scrapped for 15 years. But anyway, that was of the time, and thankfully things have improved slightly. All right, we're going to be back with the news.